Hello, this is the Conversations Politics Podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. Labor this week has released its policy for reforming higher education. It did get rather lost in the hype around a new Prime Minister and a dramatic reshuffle. But higher education will be one of the key issues at next year's election, and there is added interest because Malcolm Turnbull has hinted at revamping the Coalition's university deregulation policy, which hasn't got through the Senate. Kim Carr is Labor's spokesman on higher education, and he joins us today to discuss the opposition's alternative. Kim Carr, can you start by telling us what are the main differences between Labor's policy and that of the government?
The Labor Party is committed to invest more money into higher education and to provide the support for students so that there would be an increase in the amount of money provided by the government to students by about 27%. When the program starts through to 2026 of some 45%, the difference between Labor and Liberal. We argue that there is totally unnecessary to have the $100,000 degrees, and we believe that the university system can function more effectively if it was able to be more responsive to local needs. And if with that level of public investment, we believe there's an obligation on the universities to work with the Commonwealth to improve standards and to improve the number of graduates that are actually produced every year. We believe that the dropout rates are far too high.
Now, the government really was saying that universities need to do more to pay their way. Students do need to pay somewhat more of the burden. Your total policy would cost some $2.5 billion net over the forward estimates. Nothing comes for free in politics. You've got to find savings. Where would this money come from?
Well, we've already made announcements in regard to changes to the taxation concessions on superannuation and changes in regard to multinational companies paying tax in Australia. We believe we can improve the taxation system so that revenue is made available for higher priorities. And we regard that the education system is a very, very high priority for a Labor government.
And that money hasn't been spent
elsewhere. No, it hasn't. And because these programs run for very long periods of time, as do the savings measures, we believe there's sufficient monies available to cover the extra costs of this program. But in the end, it's about priorities. We believe that this is an area in which the government should give higher priority in terms of the public benefit that higher education gives for the economy and for our society.
Now, there would be some losers under your changes, notably the private colleges that the government believes should get some help. Why don't you think they're deserving of some assistance?
We don't believe there's any real need to expand the system beyond what is already being proposed. There's no evidence of a shortage of people being able to provide or get access to higher education in this country. We believe that the private colleges that are in the system do a good job, but we don't need to expand it still further. And of course, the expansion of the system costs a lot of money. And we have used that offset to help us fund the program to expand the benefits so we don't have to have the $100,000 degrees.
And what's that worth, that saving from the private colleges?
Over 10 years, it's about $3.6 billion.
And what about over the forwards?
It's about $1.2 billion in immediate cost to the budget to expand to the private colleges. Now, in time, if there's a public benefit demonstrated for expansion, well, that's something we'll look at. But in the present budgetary circumstances, we believe there's more than enough scope within the system to allow for the public provision of places in our university system.
Now, the universities have almost all supported the government's concept of deregulating their fees. Aren't you out of sync with their thinking?
Well, the university managements got the call wrong. They got it completely wrong. The public doesn't support the $100,000 degree. The public doesn't support the deregulation of our university system. And I've said from day one that the proposals that the vice-chancellors had put forward through Universities Australia were unfair and were unnecessary. They supported, they locked into a government program without negotiation, without consultation. They made a political error. The public were never going to buy the government's proposal. The parliament has rejected it, and I've got no doubt that we can demonstrate that it was unnecessary and totally unfair.
But the university managements are the people at the coalface, and when you say they've got it wrong, that's a big call.
No, it's an accurate reflection of the situation here. We're providing additional money which they had assumed would not be done. The political proposition that the vice-chancellors put when this government came to office is that there wasn't the political will, that is in the political system, for there to be an increase in the investment in our universities. We're demonstrating that to be wrong. We're saying that a Labor government believes that this is an extremely important area of public enterprise. We want to change our university system. It's not a blank check. It's not a proposition that says everything's perfect. On the contrary, it says that with increased public investment comes increased responsibilities, increased performance will be required, and higher levels of accountability. Now, some vice-chancellors will find that an awkward proposition. But when we are spending $14 billion a year, and that's what the Commonwealth spends on our universities, we are, I believe, on behalf of the Australian people, we've got an obligation to ask that the universities are accountable for that money and that the performance of our universities is measured properly. And that's why we're establishing a Higher Education Commission, because we think we could actually improve the level of engagement with our universities and the level of performance of our universities.
We'll come to that commission in a moment, but isn't there a fair argument on the part of the universities that in the modern world where they have to compete internationally, deregulation is appropriate?
No, because by international standards, the amount of government support that is provided is quite reasonable. There was a funding review undertaken. Jane Lomax-Smith, who was a former higher education minister in South Australia, and a number of very senior researchers undertook a review of the adequacy of funding, which found that it was quite reasonable by international standards. Now, they wanted a little increase, which we have taken notice of. We have acknowledged the report and its value. We've increased the amount of money. We're restoring the 20% cut that this government wants to make. And remember, that was the claim that the university said was the justification for their actions. They said if the government's cutting 20%, that they're entitled to charge students whatever they can get away with. Well, we said, no, that's not right. We don't believe the cut's justified, and we don't believe you should be able to charge whatever you like.
Now, you have the goal of increasing the number of students completing their study by 20,000 a year from 2020. Mm. How would you achieve that?
Well, we think that the present situation where one in four full-time students is not completing their university degrees after 8 years is totally inappropriate. We know that for Indigenous students, the numbers of people who are not completing after 8 years is about 55%. We know for regional students, for remote students, for mature age students, it's one in three people. We know that for students who enter the university with a very low entrance standards are falling by the wayside by the tune of one in two. Now, these are students that are being, I think, mistreated in the system. It is wrong to tell people that you can go to university when there's a very high prospect that you're not going to succeed, and you know that, and you haven't provided the support to change that situation.
So who's mistreating them exactly?
I believe that the universities have to do more to support students that they enrol so that we can get more successful students through our university system without the $100,000 degree, without the super debts. And we've got to have a situation where people who go to university who end up with a debt but no degree has to be brought to an end. What we are able to do through our equity funding, we're providing $2 billion in equity funding across a 10-year period, and in regard to our processes through the Commission, we believe we're able to lift the standard of teaching. We're able to provide resources and different approaches to teaching to reduce the number of people that are not completing after 8 years.
But it sounds as though there are more issues involved here, because even ordinary students without any special problems with reasonable educational backgrounds don't seem to be getting through in the numbers they should.
Well, what we do know is that students with a very high entrance rate, and particularly at the group of eight universities, have much lower levels of non-completion, much lower.
But what about just the average student, but one without significant problems?
I'm saying across the system, if we look across the system, good and bad, the numbers after 8 years not completing are one in four. That's not satisfactory. Now, these are people that are seeking Commonwealth support, which they're getting. I believe it may well be to the tune of $400,000 a year in support is going to students that fall by the wayside. Now, there are some students that will fall by the wayside. You know, change of circumstances, change of mind, sickness, family situation. There's a whole lot of reasons why there are legitimate reasons for people not to continue the university studies. But after 8 years, one in four people not completing, I think, is too high. We need to do something about that.
Now, you have suggested that universities are gaming the system. What do you mean by this?
Well, I think there's a well-known fact that we've got some of the most intelligent, articulate and capable people running our universities in the country. Wherever there's a government program, there are people around that want to take advantage of it. What we want to ensure is that where governments appropriate money for education purposes, that it's spent wisely, we get value for money, and that people who are administering the program know what's actually going on in the university. One of the propositions that I'd like to see happen through a Higher Education Commission is to have some poachers turn gamekeepers.
Could you explain this?
Well, I think it's important that we have people who have direct understanding of how universities operate, have a expertise that's understood and trusted, and are able to provide to government advice on how things actually occur. We know, for instance, Michelle, I've had circumstances just recently where primary schools in Victoria were failing student teachers, but their universities, it's put to me, were passing them. So these are student teachers who couldn't pass the practicums, couldn't actually do the practical work of running and maintaining a proper teaching practice, getting passed for their teaching degrees. Now, there has been too often suggestions of soft marking, of plagiarism, and a whole lot of other things that go on in our universities. We need to lift the bar, just make sure those things don't happen. We need to improve the quality of teaching, and we need to improve some of our administrative practices.
Could you just explain what the higher education new body that you'd set up, which you're calling the Higher Education Productivity and Performance Commission, what it would do?
Well, it'd be world's best practice. It's a arm's length independent body that is able to provide advice to government and to universities. It'd be based on the best experience from the Hong Kong High Commission, the New Zealand High Commission, and a similar body that's in the United Kingdom. It would provide the expertise to negotiate the funding agreements with universities. It would provide advice on long-term trends that are occurring within our university system, long-term needs of universities within our system, and would provide that buffer between the universities and the government to prevent the politicisation of the administration of the university system, which I think is occurring under this present government. We've seen that particularly with some of the research programs, and we want to see that put an end to.
And would it have a section of gamekeepers to deal with the poachers.
We negotiate all of these things out through consultations with the university system and the public, through a green and white paper process once we were in government. But in essence, you want to have a representative body. That is, you'd have vice chancellors represented on the commission. You'd have education experts. You'd have some business people. You'd have a range of people that actually knew what was going on in universities and can sort the wheat from the chaff when it comes to the development.
The goodies from the baddies,
and the development of the policy framework reflects good practice and make sure that government gets value for money, and the public, who I say are investing $14 billion a year, they've got a right to know that they're getting a quality outcome through our university system.
The picture you paint of university management is really quite a negative one, quite a dark one, as though they're ripping off the system in some way. Do you think in government you would have a fairly fractious relationship with these managements?
I've been in government. I've been a minister for 5 years, responsible for the research program. We had a very good relationship with the universities and vice chancellor, extremely good relationship. I've got no reason to believe that that won't be replicated, but I'm not naive when it comes to the spending of public money. I've never known a government program whereby there couldn't be improvements. I've never known a budget situation where university vice chancellor of one form or another hasn't said they want more money. I've never known a situation where the universities believe that there's perfection from their side in regard to the way in which government programs are operating. This is an incredibly important area of public administration. So we have to have a realistic, tough-minded and idealistic view about what the system can actually produce.
Presumably these problems, tendencies to exploit the system existed before this government. So
they exist in every government.
Why didn't you do more at the time to try to deal with the problem?
Well, we did. And that's why there was a different approach. I took a different approach in regard to the research program, which I believe we were much closer to understandings of what's going on in the universities, and I believe has occurred. There is a tendency within the education department and the undergraduate program for there to be much more formula-driven tick-and-flick approaches to public administration rather than a deep understanding of what the needs of universities are and the way in which the government can assist universities meet their missions. Now, as far as I've been, long as I've been involved in this area, and I've been now a senator, this is my 23rd year, we've always understood that there are ways to improve public administration. But it comes from a steely-eyed understanding of what's actually happening rather than a naive assumption that what people say they're doing is necessarily what they are doing. I have no doubt that we have very, very high quality public administrators in our university system. But I also notice that there have been significant changes in the approach that many universities have taken in recent times, seeing themselves more as businesses, not as public institutions. And that leads to a different culture. There has been increasing pressure on, particularly on junior members of staff, and a lot greater pressure on junior members of staff to take the teaching load. And there needs to be a higher level of attention paid to improving the quality of the teaching program that's actually operating within our universities.
This tendency to commercialisation has been going on, of course, for quite a while. It's not really possible to turn back that clock, is it?
No, but it's not a question of it being... I don't necessarily want to say, for instance, that the relationship with the business community can't improve. In fact, it can. We have very poor levels of cooperation, collaboration in our research program. But I do think that some of the decisions that have been taken about casualisation and the what's so-called productivity improvements, which we see the reduction in standards, are some things that we do need to attend to. What we want to see is that more graduates, more successful graduates, not just graduates being passed through soft marking. We want to be able to ensure that our graduates are able to be job ready. We want to see that students that are enrolled are in areas in which there's a reasonable prospect for most of them that they will get employment. And we want to be able to say to our universities, or have our universities work in partnership with government to address skill shortages, as well as create new knowledge and see that we can produce a more productive economy. So there are big questions here, given the role of universities. And what I'm saying is that if we invest heavily, which is what a Labor government will do, we've got a right to expect that there's a quid pro quo for that. And that goes to the issues of standards and in terms of performance and accountability, and I think we can do better in that area.
Just finally, can I ask you about the education export industry, which has been very important for Australia and will continue to be. How do you see this going in the future? And do you think that the needs of that industry have in some ways compromised other aspects of our university system? You speak of soft marking and so on.
There is a real risk that if we allow the qualities and the standards of our university system to decline, we will in fact undermine our international reputation upon which rests our success in international education. When it's all said and done, that's what we're selling. It's quality.
But do the needs of that industry contribute to the danger of decline?
And this is where we've come into trouble in the past. By going down market, we in fact undermine our reputation. And if the demand to increase recruitment of students is at the expense of quality, then we will in time undermine the number of students who we're able to attract. We certainly undermine the pricing that we're able to
see. You're talking about recruitment of overseas students.
Overseas students, international students, but the same principles also apply to domestic students, the same points of view. And we need to lift the standards in our universities to protect their reputation, to protect the quality. That's why in the research program I've always argued we need to be concentration on excellence, and in the teaching program we need to concentrate on the high quality teaching to actually lift performance in such a way as that people come away from it with a university qualification that is tradable anywhere in the world. The last thing we want to see is our reputation tarnished by bad practices. And so the government has, on behalf of the nation, a responsibility for quality assurance, and we have to insist on the highest standards.
Kim Carr, thank you very much for talking with us today. And that's all from the Conversations Politics podcast. Thank you to my producer, Matt Dawson. We'll be back with another interview soon. I'm Michelle Grattan.